Thank you. Thank you, Your Honor. Good morning, and may it please the court. This case involves a police officer and a business owner. The business owner saw the detective Mornberg. He approached him and told him about a problem that he was having with Mr. Collins, who was suing him in a civil action.
Well, that was after he had reported and the police uniformed officer had taken a crime report on the loss of the plates, right?
That is correct.
So the first contact was actually between Mr. Chadwick and the Colton Police Department, not the detective.
That is correct.
All right.
And when nothing came of the report that Mr. Chadwick had made to the police officer who initially invested the case, he ran into Mornberg, who was somebody who he had known for over 20 years.
So the case had not been assigned to a detective yet? Is that
it? Had not been. As a matter of fact, it was never assigned to Detective Mornberg ever.
Well, he worked the case.
He did work the case.
I'm not sure what the distinction you're trying to make is. Well, he is a detective. The department only had, five on the entire force?
Yeah, but
job is to investigate crimes. A crime report had been made. What's wrong with that?
Oh, I'm not saying anything is wrong with it, Your Honor.
Okay.
Yeah.
I thought you were insinuating something unethical about the fact
investigated
a crime.
No, I'm just saying that he never was assigned to the case. He assigned himself to the case. Generally, his sergeant would assign him to a case.
Okay, so you are insinuating that there was something improper about the detective doing what he did.
I think that what I'm trying to point out is that there was a long-standing relationship between Chadwick and Detective Mornberg.
But what do we do in small towns throughout the Ninth Circuit where everybody knows everybody else?
Let me move on and concede that point to you.
Idea.
The time that Detective Mornberg met with Chadwick, Chadwick told him that Collins had stolen the license plates from the vehicle that it should not have come with. And he also gave Detective Mornberg the case file, basically the deal file. And in that deal file was contained a number of documents, all of which indicated that the license plate was on the vehicle, including application for insurance.
Well, Mr. Corporate, I'm not sure where you're going with the argument, but there were no taxes paid to the state of California on the sale or transfer of the vehicle because at least Mr. Chadwick understood that the vehicle was going to be taken out of state, and yet your client is found in possession of the vehicle with the plates that should have been surrendered to DMV at the time of the initial transaction, and all this gets included in the report of investigation and turned over to the San Bernardino County District Attorney, who reviews the file and decides that there's probable cause to file felony charges against Mr. Collins. What's the problem here? I don't see the issue.
Well, the issue is that Mr. Collins says that he did not take the plates, that the plates came with the vehicle, the tax should have been paid by Chadwick. That's who has to, whenever you buy a car, you don't separately pay the sales tax or the registration. That's done by the dealership.
Wasn't there information uncovered in the investigation? Mr. Flores, the lot attendant, told the police that he took the plates off the car and he left them in the office on the day of the initial transaction?
Absolutely not, Your Honor.
Well, didn't I read something in the report to that effect?
If you did, you must have misread it because...
I think so.
Well, here's what happened, that Mr. Chadwick told Detective Mornberg that the lot person had taken the license plates off of the vehicle.
Counsel, let me refer you to SER 003, the declaration of Hector Flores. Paragraph 4, after the truck was sold, Scott Chadwick and the finance manager, Darren, told me to remove the license plates from the Chevy truck. I then went out to the truck, which was parked near the office, and I removed both the front and rear license plates. I then returned to the office with the license plates, and I left the license plates in the office.
This is
a customer who purchased the truck was in the office at the time I left the license plates there. Isn't that in the record?
That is a declaration that was made by Mr. Flores. Who was the lot man in support of the motion for summary judgment. However,
in his testimony, there was probable cause, correct?
Yes.
Doesn't that go to establishing probable cause that Mr. Collins must have taken the plates?
That is something that was never in the understanding of Detective Morenberg.
But I thought you said that Mr. Chadwick told the detective that his lot man took the plates.
Yes, and as a result,
lot man says in his declaration that that is so.
Yes, but in his declaration, Mr. Chadwick says that he talked to the lot man and to all other employees about this incident after the incident took place, and nobody, including the lot man, remembered one way or the other on that issue. That was in his deposition.
Now, counsel, the question in this case is whether there was one of the questions is whether there was probable cause.
Yes.
Now, it's not beyond a reasonable doubt. So
no,
many
I
times,
understand.
Many times in an investigation, some witnesses will say something, some witnesses will say something else. That doesn't mean there's not probable cause that a crime has occurred. So why would there be a lack of probable cause? Because certainly I understand your client has a different version of events. That's often the case in criminal investigations. So what more is there than that?
Well, Detective Morenberg never talked to the lot man, never asked him one way or the other, never talked to him at all. Just took Mr. Chadwick's word for it. And then when he went to talk to Mr. Collins, he went there with the intention of not finding out what Mr. Collins had to say, but to seize his vehicle and all of the documents that he had in there that he told Detective Morenberg that were in there, that were pertinent to his lawsuit with regard to this truck.
Let's assume that's the case then. I mean, again, now, the question here is that did the detective at the time the car was seized, was there probable cause that a crime had occurred? And he had information from Mr. Collins, who had been reliable in the past. I believe there's a Mr. Ruiz who had called and said some strange things were going on. There was the former owner of the truck, I think Mr. Boyd.
Well, Mr. Boyd, I think, is very interesting, and I'd like to discuss Mr. Boyd for just a second.
We're running out of time, so.
Yeah. With regard to Mr. Boyd, Detective Morenberg accused Mr. Collins of trying to bribe Mr. Boyd. And he said that he heard that directly from Mr. Boyd.
But counsel, that conversation with Mr. Boyd, that is not reflected in the police report that Detective Morenberg filed.
Exactly my point, Your Honor. What he told the police officers who were there to effectuate the seizure of the vehicle, he told them that. And told Mr. Collins that Mr. Boyd had told him that Mr. Collins had tried to bribe him for $200. The evidence from Mr. Boyd's testimony is that he never talked to Detective Morenberg, and that he certainly never told him that he had been bribed and that he absolutely never had been bribed. This is like a smoking gun, Your Honor. Why would he do this if the real person that he thought had been bribed was this Mr. Ruiz, who is a person who used to live in the, or still lives in this motel where Mr. Collins was staying, who had very hard feelings against Mr. Collins, and who called Mr. Chadwick and told him that Mr. Collins was going to sue him and that he would do anything that he could do to help out Mr. Chadwick. So the first allegation of a bribe was that Mr. Boyd had been bribed. There was absolutely no evidence that Detective Morenberg had at the time that he made those allegations, not only to Mr. Collins, but also to the police, that there was any such activity that had taken place.
Okay, thank you very much, counsel. You're over time.
Thank you.
Good morning, Your Honors, and may it please the Court. Christopher Pisano, Best, Best, and Krieger, on behalf of Detective Jack Morenberg and the City of Colton. There are some overlapping issues amongst the respondents in this case. Ms. Brady, who represents Mr. Chadwick, is going to address the collateral estoppel argument because that's more applicable to her client.
Mind your time.
I'm going to address some of the others. I wanted to focus my remarks on something that was said in the reply brief, and that it is on pages 6 and 7, and it's really talking about the standard of review of summary judgment motions. And the appellant's attempt to parse out and create a distinction in the standard for economic versus non-economic cases. And that simply does not exist. It's talking about the Matsushita case. And the Matsushita case is admittedly an economic case. It's a RICO case involving predatory pricing. But it's also the underlying allegation is that there was a conspiracy to engage in the predatory pricing scheme. The Supreme Court did not make a distinction of economic versus non-economic causes of action. What the Supreme Court did was look at the advisory committee's notes, the 1963 notes, when Rule 56E was revised. And what they said was that Rule 56E, when you read it in total, it creates somewhat of a heightened standard when the allegation on its face seems implausible. If it makes no economic sense, then the plaintiff has to come up with some persuasive evidence in order to raise that genuine issue of material fact. And that, I think, gets to the crux of the issue with regards to Detective Morenberg. What on earth was in it for him? That's a question that has never been answered. It's a question I posed at the hearing on the summary judgment, and it's a question I would pose today. Detective Morenberg was a 30-year veteran of the force. He barely knew Mr. Chadwick. They had a shared hobby, and he had investigated a couple of other crimes at the dealership. That was the extent of the relationship.
Counsel, why are you so worried about this issue of motivation? Motivation really has nothing to do with the probable cause analysis that we're required to do on both the seizure and malicious prosecution claims. So why do we even get drawn into that issue?
The reason, Your Honor, is that the entire case of the appellant and the plaintiff hinges on this supposed conspiracy that Mr. Chadwick and Detective Morenberg were in cahoots to essentially put the screws to Mr. Collins so he would drop his civil lawsuit. Detective Morenberg didn't care about the civil lawsuit. It had nothing to do with him. So why would he risk his 30-year career, fabricate evidence, lie on the stand, risk criminal prosecution to help a passing acquaintance? I think it just shows that there's really, when you peel the onion back, even just past the first layer, there's no there when it comes to this case. And each cause of action is like a domino that falls thereafter. When you talk about probable cause to seize the truck, the court has picked up on this. It's not a beyond a reasonable doubt standard. It's a fair probability that a crime had been committed or was being committed. And Detective Morenberg had been told it was an out-of-state sale, the plates had been removed, he goes to the hotel, and there's the truck with the plates. If that's not probable cause, then what is? He certainly had probable cause to seize the vehicle. With regards to the other charges, the perjury and the bribery, The DMV statement of facts, which was signed under the penalty of perjury, says on its face it's an out-of-state sale. And Mr. Collins signed that. And then he sees the truck. That's probable cause of perjury. And then you get to the bribery. And Mr. Corper brought up Mr. Boyd. And yes, Mr. Boyd testified at his deposition 2 years later differently than what he told Detective Morenberg. That doesn't mean that Detective Morenberg is fabricating evidence. It just means there's a discrepancy in the testimony. Mr. Ruiz testified consistently. He testified consistently, or he told Mr. Detective Morenberg that there was a bribe, and then he testified in his deposition that there was a bribe. That's probable cause of the bribery. Very quickly on Monell, because I want to leave Ms. Brady her time. On Monell, there has to be showing and evidence that the customer policy was a moving force of the constitutional violation. Sergeant Jolliffe, all he did was require that the form be filled out. And that form is important because the complainant is acknowledging that it's a misdemeanor to submit a false application. Detective Jolliffe didn't do nothing. He didn't refuse to investigate. He gave them the form and said, if you fill this form out and send it back to me, I will investigate. They never sent back the form. There's no evidence of Monell. The city should not be in this case. With that, I'm going to yield to Ms. Brady. Thank you, Your Honors.
Morning, Your Honors. Erin Brady on behalf of Scott Chadwick. I just have a few issues to address. I just want to inform the court that, as it has already keyed in, the issue, the standard for probable cause is, was it objectively reasonable for the defendant to suspect plaintiff had committed a crime? As to my client, it was objectively reasonable from the evidence that was put forth at the summary judgment hearing. He had a lot porter who went out. He was directed to remove the license plate. He removed the license plate. My client then began to receive all these phone calls from people afterwards warning him that something was going on with Mr. Collins. Then he receives notification that Mr. Collins still had the license plates on the truck. He became concerned for his own business, and he made a police report. That's the basis of his liability, and it was objectively reasonable for him to report stolen license plates at that time. I want to move on to one or two statements that were made by counsel for Mr. Collins. As far as the accusation that Mr. Detective Morenberg and Chadwick were close friends or had known each other for 30 years, as counsel has already pointed out, the extent of their knowledge of each other was minimal at best. They had run into each other at one event. That is the other outside of their business conduct, whereas Detective Morenberg was researching events that happened and police reports over the years that had been made at that auto sales shop. Other than that, they didn't know each other. They never socialized. And the record is at ER.
Counsel, I thought you were going to address the collateral estoppel issue.
I will absolutely address that, Your Honor. Collateral estoppel in this case applies because as the standard of probable cause is objectively reasonable. At the criminal hearing for Mr. Collins, the court found that there was probable cause to hold him over for trial on the issues as Detective Morenberg arrested him for, and therefore collateral estoppel applies. Those are the same issues here. The court there found that Detective Morenberg and Mr. Chadwick, both who testified at that hearing and both who were extensively cross-examined by Mr. Corper at that hearing, who was representing Mr. Collins, found their testimony credible and found, unfortunately I don't have the quote in front of me, but found that it was credible to believe that the acts had been committed. And the testimony the judge based that on at that criminal hearing was
counsel,
a testimony.
I didn't see anything in the record about a credibility finding. What I saw was sort of the standard, I'm binding him over, finding there's probable cause.
The court found that there was
not a credibility finding.
It doesn't say specifically credible as to those two witnesses. It says, I found there's reason to believe, and I apologize, don't have the quote in front of me.
Your argument is that in order to reach that determination, the preliminary hearing judge had to necessarily conclude that the witnesses for the prosecution were credible.
Absolutely, Your Honor. That is exactly my argument. The only two witnesses that were there were Mr. Chadwick and Detective Morenberg, and their credibility was challenged by Mr. Corper extensively on cross-exam, and he had a full opportunity to do so, and the court found that there was evidence to find probable cause to hold him over. And therefore, the issue was fully addressed in the criminal court and collateral estoppel applies.
Aware that we have certified to the California Supreme Court in a different case this very question as to whether or not a finding of probable cause at a preliminary hearing can serve as a basis for collateral estoppel and subsequent litigation.
I did see that, Your Honor. I understand that, I personally haven't seen this, so I just learned about this morning, that I understand that the Supreme Court had declined to accept that question, but I could be mistaken on that.
News to me.
I haven't seen that.
We would send them notes and letters, and they'd say, thank you very much, but no. however, we had a little meeting with the California Supreme Court Chief Justice, and she said, no, we like certified questions, and then they started accepting them. So
okay.
If they've declined on this one, that's news to me. But we can check that.
And I apologize. I don't know for sure if I was going to go check that after.
Of course, your information.
But the source of my information is co-counsel's former business associate who was on this case previously. But I have not personally.
Oh, you're the source? You're the unimpeachable source?
Your Honor, I heard it from another person.
Oh, geez.
Neither one of us had time to check it because we looked into it this morning.
Okay. Yeah, so we apologize that, you know, I am telling you all the reasons why
we'll
I believe
check.
That.
We'll
but I do believe that even with that pending certified question, Your Honor, that the Wiggy case applies in this matter and that the finding there and the Green case is directly on point and that the probable cause determination it was fully addressed at our preliminary hearing.
All right. Thank you very much, counsel.
Thank you.
This matter has been submitted. Thank counsel for your argument in this case.